My next guest is on the line. He is Peter Fine. He is a labor relations consultant. And as he says in his ad on Chai FM, he's not in labor, although he actually is. Peter Fine, great to have you with me on Chai FM this afternoon.
Thanks, Simon. Good afternoon to you and to the listeners.
So the conversation I want to have with you this afternoon, Peter, is about labor relations kind of in general. We'll get a little more specific, but what I really do want to do is concentrate on the issues at this time of the year. So kind of having prefaced the conversation, give me a quick snapshot. Where, or rather, what are the biggest labor issues that you are seeing South Africans deal with as we close out the year?
Well, I think there's always the issue of job insecurity in terms of retrenchments and things like that, where people are unfortunately struggling, even though it is the season where people are supposed to be spending money. Companies are often checking their books and saying, you know what, we can't afford. And at the end of the year is a good time to let people go. So kind of retrenchment is certainly up there. The other thing is people have questions about their leave entitlement and do they have to take leave and all those kind of questions as well. And then the general disciplinary inquiries, sometimes at the end of the year, you find that the procedures, it might be someone else, someone's on leave and the procedures aren't always followed as closely to the law as they're supposed to be, or people kind of forget at this time of the year that they're still supposed to be, the labor laws still apply, even though it's everyone's in the holiday mood.
Do you think that South Africans generally are pretty well educated in terms of what their legal rights are in these situations? Or do you think that there's a dearth of knowledge and there's room for a lot more education?
I think there's always room for more education. I think that certainly in the unionized environments, there's a lot of knowledge amongst the workforce and amongst the employers as well. It is the smaller and the non-unionized areas where there is both training needed both for the employees and also for the employers. Even though the legislation has been with us for a long time, 1996 and amended in 2002 in Maine, people still are ignorant of it. But I would say in general, and this is on the one hand, fortunately, but also unfortunately, kind of people are in the environment amongst their friends and their relatives where they usually are people who have been through dismissals and have been through the CCMA and can give them advice, although sometimes, unfortunately, it's a little bit devoid of the facts and they try and apply it to their case. I'm saying in particular things where there has been retrenchment, where there is mandatory severance pay of a minimum of 1 week per completed year of service. And this has been taken on to people that everybody should get paid service money, as they call it, at least 1 week per year of service. It doesn't matter the fact that they were dismissed for misconduct or capacity, because it only applies in the dismissal regarding operational reasons, which is retrenchments, that severance pay is applicable.
Peter, this issue of retrenchments at this time of the year must really cut deep. I mean, as you said, people, there's an expectation, spending money over this particular period, not being jobless. And I'm just wondering, what recourse does somebody who's received a retrenchment letter at this time of the year, what's kind of a cost-effective way for them to look to see how they could enforce their rights?
Well, I mean, Section 189 of the Labor Relations Act deals with retrenchments, or as we call them, as I mentioned, dismissal for operational reasons. And there is also a code of good practice in terms of the process that should be followed. And often where we have a problem is that there hasn't been consultation before a person gets told, you know, we're retrenching you. And that is procedurally unfair according to the law. There has to be what is called joint meaningful consensus seeking consultation. So there are a lot of things, but it means basically that you need to discuss with the person or people that even if they not that they definitely will, even if they just might be affected by a retrenchment, you need to consult with them. And it needs to be formalized in a section 189(3) letter in which you explain the reasons, alternatives considered, selection criteria, the timing and the proposed severance pay that you will be offering. And that people can then, the law says, if they come back with a written response, then you as the employer have to give a written response in reply. But basically that people are aware of the situation and come forward and say, look, you know, instead of retrenching all of us, can we not maybe look at some of us working Monday, Wednesday, Friday this week, and next week, Tuesday, Thursday, to try and keep us employed.
Interesting.
You know, aren't there some shift structures that we can bring in? Or I'm prepared to consider, rather than being part of the ever-increasing, unfortunately, pool of unemployed people in the country that we haven't got a handle on and keeps getting bigger, you know, I'd rather than be in that, I'm prepared to take a 20% pay cut just to keep my job.
Yeah.
Obviously, as long as that is above the statutory minimum wage.
Peter, another issue that is very widespread at the moment, being reported all over the place, this issue of remote working. It seems like a whole bunch of employees are insisting that workers return to the actual physical place of work. And I'm just wondering, legally, what rights do employees have around working from home or flexible hours? How does that issue get dealt with?
Right. It is something that there isn't a standalone remote work law in South Africa that is in other countries do have certain legislation like that. The key points as it stands, looking at the Labour Relations Act, Basic Condition Employment Act, and the OSAC, the Occupational Health and Safety, is that there's no automatic right to work from home. It's all contractual. And if your workplace is the office, then you can be required to return to it. But you know, if there are changes to, let's say the person has been working from home since COVID times, you know, that they is some consultation and some kind of way that one can try and reach a compromise in terms of the way going forward.
Really interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because this is a double-edged sword.
The return to... Sorry?
I'm saying this is really interesting because it does seem to be a double-edged sword, this particular issue. We're looking at it from the perspective of the employee only and particular employees, but I've read certain articles by people saying this is actually working counter to the interests of my career. I'm not being mentored. I'm not working collaboratively. You know, it's not automatically
right.
necessarily a bad thing that one has to go back into the office, specifically for the younger workers.
Right. No, there are definitely certain advantages for the employee as well. And, you know, the collaboration and things like that. And unfortunately, I mean, I don't want to mention the L word on air, but, you know, due to load shedding, kind of you're finding a lot of employees don't have backup systems if they are working remotely. 100%. Let's say you are in a, you know, you're in a Zoom meeting with your colleagues and we have load shedding, all of a sudden you're not part of that meeting. Obviously, if you're in the office, that doesn't affect you. So that I do know has cropped up a few times that people have been in that situation. The other also being the cost in South Africa of data, of airtime, of connectivity is also quite high. That people do kind of are trying to say to their employer that this should be an extra payment that should be included is towards my work from home costs. And the interesting thing is also that what was happened is we've seen that the OSAC, the health and safety, even though the person is working from home, that still applies. In other words, that you should be using a comfortable chair and things like that, So
Interesting.
even that applies. And
Didn't know that.
sometimes people, the employers feel that the fact that you're working from home means that you are available beyond standard working time. And that's not true. The hours to the Basic Conditions Employment Act, your hours, overtime limits and rest breaks, they still apply. Whether you're at work or you're sitting at your dining room table, if your employer is requiring you to work beyond your standard office hours, they have to pay you overtime. And that often is kind of that delineation is a lot clearer where a person is working in the workplace as opposed to working from home.
Absolutely, 100%. Peter Fine, we're going to leave it there this afternoon. I'm out of time, but Shabbat Shalom to you and your family, and I've no doubt we'll be chatting again soon.